Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh-Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Welcome, everybody. You are here joining us at the Roundtable. We are Community Education Arts. I am Sarah E. Morin. I am joined by Alice Cavanaugh-Scober.
Hello.
And our special guest, Deborah Peterson. And we are working our way through four excellent excerpts of literature and pieces in entirety. What we try to do with NICE, which stands for Noblesville Interdisciplinary Creativity Expo, we try to look at classic works of literature and see how it inspires us as artists of every stripe, be it musician, be it writer, poet, visual artist. But we also analyze in depth the book as a whole, but also a particular quote from each. And tonight we are tackling the classic young adult novel, A Wrinkle in Time.
Woo-hoo!
By Madeline Ellingall. And I have to really work on my it flows really well, the lingle.
I don't know that I've ever actually heard anybody pronounce that out loud. I always read it as lingle, but I don't really know how it's pronounced.
Well, for tonight, it will be lingle.
Okay.
and as we post things, some diligent listener can correct us in the comments.
That's right.
Absolutely. So I thought that I would just take us through just a little summary of it, kind of dive in. But before I do, I am curious to know, what was each of our first exposures to this novel?
I think my grandmother, who sent me books all the time, because that's what I did as a child. I read a lot. I think she sent me this book either the year before. Well, this is the visual you have is my book up there that I've screen shared, and it has the Newbery Medal notification gold, you know, stamp on it. Mm-hmm. A seal, I guess I should say. It's a tinfoil thing on the actual cover of the book. And she sent me that as soon as it won the award. So I know this was published in, I want to say, 62?
Yes.
But I don't know. I'm not sure when it got the award. I know I had it for a long time before I actually read it.
Deborah, what was your first exposure to A Wrinkle in Time?
Well, I first came across this in the summer reading program when I was in elementary school. You know, how you did go down and get new books every week and then chart it, and then you got a little prize at the end. So I came across it then, but it was, I had mixed emotions about it as a kid at the time. I guess I just wasn't ready for it because I think it was my very, very first taste of sci-fi fantasy. Mm-hmm. And up to then, I had been reading, you know, My Friend Flicka and Nancy Drew. So it was a different kind of a read, and I don't know if I was prepared for it. But there were things in it that just, you know, like that whole concept of the Tesseract. Mm-hmm. Oh, that really got... And that really hooked into my math soul, and I didn't let it go. And so it was always like back in this part of my brain right here. I didn't let it go. I knew that we were going to become friends again. It just wasn't time at that point. But when I really sharpened that relationship is, and I know that you both know this story, is that it was one of my twin daughter's favorite book for me to read to them when they were in utero, because it didn't matter what kind of a day we were having or what kind of, you know, stuff they had going on between them inside of me, or whatever it was, when I sat down and said, okay, girls, we're going into A Wrinkle in Time, there were just, you could almost see them like just sitting back and just listening. And they were very calm. It was very soothing. So it was always a positive experience in bringing all the three of us together in A Wrinkle in Time. And So it kind of spoke to the moment, along with the mess, its own messages that it had to send. So it served double duty for me at that point.
And as you were mentioning last time, isn't it fascinating how a work changes for us at different stages in our lives?
Yes, yes. And when you pick it up, for the reason for the message of that you didn't get from the last time. So
right.
Definitely, it's one of those books that has its own kind of magic.
Yeah, I think the first time I read it, I really read glossing all this science-y, math-y stuff, because I was never a science-y, math-y kid. And as I reread it, and for, you know, over the many, many years of my life, I'm so ancient, you know, I paid more attention to that stuff, especially after, well, there were several themes we'll talk about later that I noticed more and more in the 70s than when I probably did my first reading of this book. So those discussions will come in the workshop, I'm sure. But I remember kind of trying to, oh God, they're talking about math and science. Blah, you know? and also, I think my perspective of the book changed for the better, and I liked it more after my little brothers were born. So that was, you know, because Meg had a little brother, and I, you know, sort of could relate to that once my first little brother was born. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, like you all, I read it when I was young. I don't remember exactly when, but I do remember that it was the second of Lingle's books that I read. The first one I read was A Wind in the Door, which is the second one of the Time Quintet, which this is the first. Mm-hmm. And that whole series follows the Murray family and Calvin O'Keefe, who eventually becomes part of the Murray family. Yep. Spoiler. Sorry, spoilers.
No, that's okay. I've read the Quintet. I've read all of those books. I know. It's a wonderful series. I highly recommend it.
Yes. But yes, I remember just being enraptured by that idea of something that's slightly outside your grasp, but you can just, you know, with your young mind, just brush against it. Mm-hmm. And you feel yourself getting bigger.
Yeah.
So I definitely appreciated that. So thank you for sharing those little memories of our first experiences with the book. This is a well-known book, and as you were talking, Deborah reminded me that it's even a little bit problematic to call it a young adult novel. Even when it was published, she had a hard time getting it sold as a children's novel. The idea was that these concepts are too complex for young people. There are definitely things that we would recognize as young adult novel tropes now, particularly in the character of Meg, who's really struggling with her identity. But at the time, they weren't really sure, is it a children's book? Is it an adult book that happens to feature children? And so that in itself is kind of a problematic way of looking at it, to just define it as sheerly a young adult novel. The summary, very briefly, we have Meg and her child genius brother, Charles Wallace, and together with popular boy Calvin O'Keefe, they are called to an adventure by the Mrs. W's. And the Mrs. W's steal the scene in every scene they're in. It's what's it, who, and which. And the goal is to rescue Meg's missing father. Mr. Murray is a physicist and a space explorer who is trapped on the planet, and I always say it wrong, Kamatsas. he's trapped there by it, and it is a giant I and a giant T, it. And every time that you read it, you should read it with an it. And it is a giant brain who makes everything around it conform to its own thoughts. Along with this, there's a larger spiritual battle. It's being waged on both this planet and in the universe as a whole, and it's basically the fight of good and evil. Evil's personified as being the black thing. It can swallow whole planets. Charles Wallace falls under the sway of it, but Meg is able to rescue him by directing all of her love for him as a unique individual at him. And so our main characters, Meg Murray, is our main viewpoint character, and she is highly identifiable. She's 13, she's scientifically brilliant, terribly awkward. She just doesn't fit in. And so I think that that's something that a lot of young people can relate to. She has a genius 5-year-old brother, and he doesn't even bother to try to fit in. He doesn't even speak to people outside the family, and he has several supernatural gifts. They include telepathy and mind reading. And then Calvin O'Keefe is a popular boy at school. He befriends Meg. When they're thrown together on this adventure, Calvin has a rough home life, and he greatly admires the closeness that he sees within the Murray family. Mr. Murray has a significant role in the second half of the book. That's Meg's father. He's been missing for several years on a secret space mission, and the children must rescue him from the planet Kamatsos. And then Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Witch, they are our mentor characters, and they are supernatural. They look like eccentric old women, but they are not human. They periodically shape-shifted into other things that the human mind can't quite comprehend. They have like a special supernatural glasses that give them power. One of them is always speaking in quotes. They're ancient. They're funny. They are a delight to behold. And then It is our main protagonist. It takes the form of a giant brain that rules and controls everything on the planet Kamatsos. The most terrifying aspect of It is its ability to absorb everything that makes a person unique and forces them into conformity. All right, so I want to talk just a little bit about the fact that this is a banned book.
Yeah.
So it won a Newbery. And it is still widely listed on favorite young adult novel lists today, but it has been banned multiple times over the years. Objections, as I mentioned, some said that, you know, it's just too complicated for children, but mostly it's been banned for religious objections. Lingle was an Episcopalian. She imbued her novel with religious elements and ideas. But at the time that she was publishing in 62, many Christians viewed them as being unorthodox. And I found a nice quote from Merrick, and I am so sorry for butchering this name, Ozywitz, who's a professor of literacy education at the University of Minnesota. And the quote is that this book is a vision of Christianity as a form of science and science as a form of search for spirituality. She, meaning Lingle, believed that there is an overlap between science and spirituality and that new Christianity would be fully compatible with what modern science tells us about the universe. To her, newly discovered parts of the universe didn't represent a challenge to the Bible. Rather, she, meaning Lingle, viewed them as part of God's creation, which is one reason that this book really appeals to me, is that it's not that you have to believe in science right. Or in spirituality. It can be both that are affirming forms of truth.
Yeah, I love her perspective on religion and science marching hand in hand through the universes, if you will. So, yeah, it's I like that, and it always makes me sad when books like this are banned or controversial for religious reasons, because for lack of a better phrase tonight, I think that's just stupid, but you know, it's just ignorant, and I mean that in the most absolute definition of the word ignorant. You know, it's just ignorant, and I get upset by that. So I recommend it. I hope people read it, and I hope it stops being banned in mm-hmm. any place.
And I'm not sure how many banned lists it's on currently.
Right.
Just speaking in the history of this novel's, wow, nearly 50 years.
Yeah.
No, more than 50 years. More than 50 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. Speaking of mathematical abilities, yep. Meg has the mind of 60.
I know this. I know this book is 1 year older than I am. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. yeah. So, but yeah, there's definitely themes of, you know, good and evil. Mm-hmm. There's a scene that describes Jesus, Gandhi, Einstein, and the Buddha standing together against the forces of evil. And so you can take that as a very pro-Christian message, because yay, Jesus, fighting against
the evil. They're the warriors, right? They're the mm-hmm. warriors against evil. Yeah.
Right. And you could also, if you're highly conservative, say, no, I don't like this because it's putting them all on the same level. So you can see why what seems to be a bridge to some people, if they're at either extreme, they just don't like that meshing.
Right.
So I personally, because, you know, I write Christian spec fic, mm-hmm. and there's so much in reading this book that if it were published today, a lot of the tropes are not that far off what I see from mm-hmm. my fellow writers. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of one of the grandmothers.
Exactly.
Yeah. Of that genre.
Join us next time as we continue with our workshop discussion for the 2021 NICE Project.